Welcome back to episode 220 of Tall Boy Radio. And as we always say, who knows where it goes when the beer flows? Well, I'll tell you something. This week we have an important message for you, and we're going to be talking about something that's probably dear to all our own hearts and something that probably people don't talk about often enough. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But first, let me introduce the other host who's with us tonight. Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Thank you, Adam. It's good to be on the podcast again, another Tuesday evening. Great to have a guest. And this is somebody I met 6-8 weeks ago at an event in Birmingham. We were chatting about what, I don't want to give the name away. I get told off if I give the name away too soon, what our guest does. And I thought it'd be great to have him on the podcast. So here they are.
Indeed, indeed. Aaron, did you want to say hello and tell us a little bit about what it is that you're here to talk about tonight?
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm the chair of a men's mental health charity called Tough to Talk. So I'm here to talk about male mental health and suicide prevention.
Yeah. Yeah. So like I said, something that is, you know, that should be dear to our hearts, whether it affects us or not, it will certainly affect somebody we know. The statistics on that are quite scary, aren't they, Aaron, when you look at it? I mean, but before we get to that, do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got involved with the charity and why you got involved with the charity?
Obviously I'm not from the UK. I'm from Alaska originally, moved here about 20 years ago. But I've always been a strong advocate of mental health. I had a really bad postnatal depression myself, and I was actually hospitalized when I had my daughter in a mental hospital, which is probably the lowest the lowest point you can get, really. So I've really looked at mental health has just always been something that I've wanted to support. And whether you're a man or a woman, it's difficult, and there's a lot of shame involved. I started working at Cooper Perry 3 years ago, and I met an incredible person, Steve Whittle. While we've been working at Cooper Perry, we lost two men to suicide, and Steve actually, it's almost been a year and a bit now, also tried to complete suicide. So it was really quite shocking because, one, I didn't know any of the statistics around men's mental health. And to be honest, I work in learning and development, and I do a lot of work around well-being, especially since COVID. Looking at resilience training, emotional intelligence, mindfulness, and it's really hard to get men engaged. So that was the first thing I recognized, is that there's always the three men who will come to most things. You know, they're quite empathetic. They're happy to talk about challenges in their lives. But I think what shocked me most when Steve was really upfront and honest about his struggles, it was probably the first time I thought, gosh, I had no idea. I wouldn't have thought. Steve is a really, he's a really like manly man. He drives a Harley. He's got tattoos, great job. He's got a great life. And I just never would have imagined that that was even something that he was contemplating, that he was thinking about. And so Steve, it was about a year ago, he said, I want to start a charity called Tough to Talk. And I want us to start getting men talking, essentially. And that's how it started. There's been a small group of us, and now there's more of us, which seems crazy. And Steve is really the powerhouse behind this charity. He's been absolutely amazing. But yeah, that's kind of how it started, is I wanted to support mental health. And then when I started to read the statistics and understand more about the crisis that men are facing, and I have a son and I have a husband, and I don't want to, I don't really want them to grow up in a world where they feel that they can't speak to their pain.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fair play. And I think you've really hit a very key point there very early on, in terms of it's that outward perception, isn't it? It's you look at people and you have an idea that what they're about, and they're fine, and their life is fine. And funnily enough, last week we did an episode which was a little bit of a throwaway episode, something that basically Dave and I wanted to do to get back in touch with some people who we went to school with. We just thought it'd be nice, and actually be nice just to do a nice nostalgic podcast about it. And actually, when the guy came on, one of the guys came on, James, who was on last week, and he said it openly, bless him. You know, I talked about how great school was, how much I loved it, because we all had a shared experience. I thought we were all having fun. It was all fantastic. Turns out this guy was bullied, and we absolutely had no idea of sort of the pain, let's face it, that this guy was going through at school. And our perception was this guy was a good laugh. He was always laughing and joking with the corridors. We had no idea, you know, and you know, for him still to be talking about it 30 odd years on, clearly, you know, he's come through it, and I'm pleased to say he's come through it well, but it's still taken effect on him. It's probably shaped him as to who he is a little bit today. But yeah, there is that perception, isn't there, Dave, that you have an idea about somebody. Were you surprised last week?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's probably what makes it so challenging, because it's from both sides of the coin. You've got the men that don't want to speak up, and you've got the outward perception, which means that people don't detect. And if you've got people that can't see there's an issue, therefore they don't ask, and the men don't want to speak up about it either, it makes it really, really difficult. I mean, Erin, what's the kind of reasons why men perhaps don't speak up in the same way that women would?
Yeah, I mean, we've been looking at some of the research. So, I mean, essentially, it's some of it is going to be cultural, right? We generally, when a boy cries, we say boys don't cry, or we say man up, or we kind of, you know, there's a point at which we tell little boys that it's not good to show emotion, so they push it down, right? And they learn to, well, I guess it's not the right thing to show and share emotion, which is not good for anybody. Any human being should be able to express themselves. It's a healthy thing to do. There's also kind of five factors that lead someone or a man down the path of contemplating suicide or having suicidal thoughts. And those five factors are gender. I need to make sure I get these right. Biological factors, current life events. It could be past experience or trauma, and psychological factors. So a lot of times when we talk about, or we're trying to support organizations with how they talk to men, and that's kind of what we're focused on, is how are we talking about some of these issues in a way that resonates with men? So oftentimes we'll say, you have a mental health issue. But if they're having difficulties with their partner, or maybe they don't have access to their children, or maybe they have an addiction, if you said to a man who's dealing with some of those issues, you have a mental health issue, he's going to say, I don't.
Yeah.
I don't recognize myself in that situation that you're describing. Like, I don't need to talk to a therapist. I have some real issues here, and I don't know how to deal with them. So we need to change the way that we look at men's mental health, and not make it about, yes, it's about poor, it can be poor mental health, but it can be a lot of other factors too. And we need them to recognize that actually, the more men that come forward, the more men that speak up and say, this is an issue I'm having, and this is how I'm trying to solve it, or this is an issue. It could be addiction, it could be something else. I need help. It will get more men talking and feeling like it's okay to not have all the answers and to be struggling.
Yeah. I mean, that it is, it's a huge taboo subject, isn't it, really? Like you say, that first, breaking down that first barrier. And I guess probably people our age, you know, Gen Xers, if you will, is it different for us, do you think? Or are younger folks who, you know, who are coming through today, are they finding it easier to talk? Because, you know, I don't know, that it seems to be that there maybe could be more in touch with their emotion, or are those gender stereotypes, are they still in place?
So I mean, it's the number one cause of death for men under 45, and 18 to 23 year olds are particularly impacted. So I would say that I wouldn't say it's generational, and that unfortunately it just seems to impact men across the board. But I think we need to think about also for younger men, who are their role models? Who do they have to look up to? Who's coming out and speaking out about? I mean, sometimes we will have men come out and speak about mental health issues. But who do we have just coming out and talking about struggling or just not having all the answers or showing emotion? Just starting some of these conversations and getting, it's really the 80% of men. We focus on the 80% of men who aren't talking, who you would think are, these are fully functioning adults. They seem like they've got it all figured out. And those are the ones that we're most surprised by. And yeah. when we go to talks, so I don't go to all the talks because Steve is our founder. We try to do men's sessions only because that's more powerful, right? Because men need to feel like they're in a safe space. But every time, even that event, Dave, that we went to, as soon as I talk about, you know, the work that I do with Tough to Talk, I'm always surrounded by people who want to talk to me about suicide and their experience with suicide in their lives. We went to, Steve gave a really powerful talk. It was 2 months ago, and every single man there was impacted by suicide. And I'm not talking about, there were 8 men around the table. There were 12 people in total, 4 women, 8 men. All 8 of those men had lost someone to suicide, and it wasn't a connection they had. They had all independently, and they had never spoken about it. And these are men between 40 and 60, and they all wanted to talk about it afterwards. And actually at that event, one of the guys left after 5 minutes, and Steve went next door and had a conversation with him and essentially saved his life because he had a plan already in place to take his own life. Steve gave this talk, the guy broke down, and he was able to go next door and help him out. And the organization then helped him out and put some support in place, but nobody had any idea.
That's terrifying. You know, that is terrifying. And first of all, it's fantastic that if it wasn't for Steve and it wasn't for your charity, then that would have been, that fellow would have been one of those other statistics that the other chaps there were talking about. So that's wonderful that you can make that difference in just that one life, to be honest with you. That's incredible. And like you say, you know, one of the things that we talked about last week, you know, before we started, you know, we lost a friend that we went to school with last year, unfortunately, to suicide. And that in itself is a tragedy. Now, when I say a friend, it was someone we hadn't seen for some years, but it still shocks you. Mm-hmm. It still shocks you to hear about those sort of things happening, because there is something that, you know, that you hear stuff like this, and it happens to everybody you know, apart from me, you know what I mean? It doesn't happen to my group of friends. And then you get everybody together, like you say, and you hear actually everybody has been touched one way or another by it. And there was the one chap there who touched him a little bit closer than some of the others. So that's utterly, utterly terrifying, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
So you said you work with, like, do you work with, like, corporate groups and what have you? You know, how do you go about reaching out to them, or do they come to you?
So, I mean, well, Steve really hustles, I have to be honest, and I look for any ways to connect. So I connected with quite a few organizations through my children's school. We're just on LinkedIn. We're contacting anyone we know who work for organizations or are looking to support men. I'm going to be honest. Sometimes people are like, well, why would we support men, or perhaps we should have something that, you know, is for men and women. And what we're trying to say is men are in crisis. Every 3 suicides out of every 4 are men. We lose 12 men a day in the UK alone. So even though women attempt to complete suicide more, they're not successful. Tragically, men are more successful because they choose more violent ways to complete suicide. So we want to work with organizations first and foremost to talk about, well, how can we make the tools, EAP, anything that you have within your organization, make sense to men? How can it speak to men? And you kind of have to change your language. A lot of HR teams are all women. So how can we help them, coach them to really engage with men in a way that makes sense? So right now we're lucky enough that we've been working with the FA. We've been working with any male dominated spaces is what we're looking for. So we've started working with some construction firms, which is really exciting. Thames Valley Police. So what we do is, or I should say what Steve does is he goes in and he delivers, USI courses. So first he comes in, he gives a tough talk, which is really quite a brutal talk because it's very, it, lays bare the realities of the suicide crisis for men in the UK. And then we go in and we support with USI courses, which is understanding suicide intervention. So what we want, the dream, is to be able to provide organizations with USI courses and start to create a group of tough talkers. And tough talkers will be identified by a badge, or with a construction company we're talking about now, we're going to get a sticker that they can wear on their hard hats. That will mean that I'm somebody who will talk to you about your mental health or about anything that's going on in your life that's causing you issues. And I am trained to be able to have conversations around suicide intervention.
Wow. Yeah, that's really good. Yeah, that's really important, isn't it, Dave?
It is, because you know, it's giving people a route to have that conversation. And if it's somebody that's visible day in, day out, because they're in the workplace, they know that they're always there. So they're not under pressure to think, now's my moment. No, I'm not ready for it. The moment's gone. They know that they're still going to be there tomorrow, next week, the week after, and they can wait and they can pick their moment to have that conversation. And they've only got to have to say a few words, and then it can be taken offline, out of the work environment or whatever, into a safe space and have those conversations. That's a really powerful way of quite simply really having an impact, because, you know, in an organization, our organization is quite small. For organizations where there's a lot of people, like construction industry, for example, or around the football industries, or where it's male dominated, as you said earlier, to have that ever presence is probably a game changer, I would say. Because you're right, with HR, most HR are females, the majority. And it's, from a man's point of view, I don't think it's any easier to talk. I mean, this is, I don't know if the evidence says anything different, but I would imagine that it's no easier to talk to a female than it is to talk to a man, because it's not a, it's more the man reaching out than who you're reaching out to. So it's that badge that says, I am the person that understands, I am safe. So it's not whether you're male or female, it's the badge that probably matters more.
Yeah. I'm not going to judge, and I'm completely here to support you. And I think just, you know, or just asking, even just asking men to say, look, if you notice something, what are you hearing? What are you seeing? What do you notice about your friends that might seem different? And instead of saying, hey, how you doing? And accepting, yeah, I'm fine. Say, no, how are you doing? Because I've noticed a few things. So even just ask twice, you know, just take that opportunity. Most people who try to complete suicide reach out to somebody in the days or weeks, and it's not always recognized as a call, as a call for help, or an interaction where someone's asking for help. It's not always obvious, but if you notice something and something just seems off, then I would just say, ask again.
Yeah, that's good. I guess, you know, it's one of those things, you're better to reach out and ask the question beforehand and be wrong than to find out afterwards that you were right. So that's, you know, that's a really important thing, is, you know, it's brave, I guess, is the word. It's being brave enough, A, to reach out and speak yourself if you're having a problem, but also there's a degree of bravery, and you can be that brave person by reaching out to somebody else and just asking the question, you know, is that what you meant? Are you okay? And I'll be honest, I have done it before, and I'm pleased to say I was wrong. The guy was fine, but he'd shared some stuff on social media, I won't name his name, that I was a little bit concerned about. And I reached out to him, just check in with him to make sure he was fine. And he was just, I think he'd had a few too many beers, and he was sharing stuff to him made sense at the time. It didn't quite mean so good the next day, but it was all good. I'd much rather it was that way. But yeah, just to read out a comment there that's been shared from your Tough to Talk YouTube channel. It says there, the construction industry loses 2 men a day to suicide in England and Wales. I mean, those are huge, huge numbers when you break it down, you know what I mean? You take that over a year and then over a decade. Those are absolutely vast numbers on which you know, and half of that challenge is, again, like you say, the construction industry is a very masculine industry. It's a very, there's that, it's got that macho stigma about it, hasn't it? And it's reaching out and saying, you know what, something isn't right. And this, and even doing that, that in itself is pretty macho. So you should never, ever be afraid to do that. So just to ask you a question, going slightly off topic. So I picked up this book then from your website. Did you want to tell us a little bit about that, the Man Up, Tough to Talk book?
Yeah, so this is something, so our founder, Steve Whittle, sort of created this with Don Bates, who's our publisher. And it's basically, they've curated stories from men, from, you know, different, from all different backgrounds, because we want to have as many men's voices in that book as possible, just talking about moments in their lives where they really struggled and their challenges, and moments where they thought, you know, I'm thinking about suicide. I'm thinking about completing suicide, and I'm really struggling with my mental health. So again, it's just a way to normalize those conversations. What we want the book to be is, a tool. So let's say you have somebody in your life and maybe it is difficult and you can't get them to respond or tell you what's going on for them. Or even if you're a woman and you're not sure how to start some of those conversations, we'd say, use this book as a tool and to say, here's some conversations. Here's some conversations from some brave men. I just like you to have this book. It's full of resources. It invites you to be a part of the website, to be a part of our charity, to continue to spread the message, but just as many places as we can get this book on bookshelves, maybe in organizations, friends sharing it, just ways to start the conversation, really. Yeah. So that book's just come out. So it's really exciting. And we have a book launch coming up in May as well.
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. Well, we'll share the link to that on our website as well, so that if you're looking at the blog post about this episode, you'd be able to click on and buy it there. But we'll also share, obviously, a link to your website so that people can find out a little bit more about what you do. Go on, Dave.
Erin, you mentioned earlier about, you mentioned role models and what role models do men have to open up and show their emotions and have these conversations. And I was just thinking that through in my head. And, you know, I'm probably going to sound quite cynical when I say this, and it's probably a little unfair to a lot of people. But when celebrities or famous people or somebody you may consider to be a role model is in the media talking about their mental health, it's normally because their image has been damaged by something they've done. And then normally, their PR is in overdrive to explain why they got drunk and got into a fight. And then the next day they're in the newspapers talking about their mental health and their struggles. And they come and go, you know, it blows up and they go. And you don't tend to then see those same people getting involved with the likes of Tough to Talk and other charities on an ongoing basis. They kind of weather the storm and then disappear again. And I wonder how it's possible to have the role models that have got the profiles that would make a difference to continue the narrative and to continue to get involved. It would take someone who's quite brave or quite devoted, and it would need quite a few people across different sort of demographics. I mean, are the people that are in that sort of sphere that are getting involved that you see are raising awareness?
Well, that's a good question. I think the way that we've been trying to go is, how can we just elevate men in male dominated spaces, men that we would term masculine, like firefighters or anyone in the construction industry, footballers, but coming out maybe and talking about not just mental health, but maybe just talking about some issues that they're having, or ways in which they reached out to a friend, or they talked, ways in which we can sort of ask them to sort of acknowledge what's going on around them, or maybe checking in with friends. Yeah, I mean, we haven't really looked at the celebrity side ourselves, or looking at I don't know anybody, if I think offhand, I don't know of anyone that I would say is completely committed, but I don't want to say that either because I don't think I've been looking into that as much maybe as I should do.
No, as I kind of prefixed it, it may be unfair because there may be people out there that are doing good work. And actually, there's an awful lot of inverted commas celebrities that do an awful lot of good work and don't shout about it because they just want to do the good work. So that may be going on. But it just seems a shame because, you know, if half the population are male and half the celebrities and famous people and influencers are male, it would be nice to see a lot more that were actually out there sort of, you know, raising awareness.
Yeah. But I guess it's interesting that you'd think that maybe you wouldn't, that maybe they wouldn't have that credibility with you though, as a man, because it feels like it's a PR stunt. So I guess how could we do that successfully then? Or what would it look like to you? Sorry, my light keeps going out. What would it look like to you to have somebody famous or someone influential being really open and honest about their struggles and really being able to take that on board and think, okay, I really trust what they're saying.
Well, I think that was my question as well, really.
Running from the male perspective, what would that look like? Because that would be interesting.
I think he's got to come across as genuine and honest for a start, that they've got to be talking about it from a point of wanting to help. Now, they could have had a crisis situation which has blown up in the media and they're using that as the springboard. That doesn't necessarily mean it's the wrong place to start. It's probably harder to buy into that if that is the place they're starting. If somebody who was just, for all intents and purposes, and you never really know, this whole point of this, you never really know what's going on in their lives, but for all intents and purposes, their media image is fine, they're successful, they're happy, etc., etc., and then one day they just say, I want to talk about men's mental health and suicide, and they get involved with a charity like yourself, but not just one or two as a sort of and not token's not the right word, like a figurehead, not like a you know, someone who's just the word, like a representative of your organization, but you know, 10, 15, 20, 25 people from sport, from you know, business leaders, people that are in the public eye in one way or another, if they just get involved and stay involved, you know, involved in regular things, and whether that's a, you know, a quarterly thing that they do, or they rotate writing the sort of, you know, the news articles or blog posts or interviews or fireside chats or, you know, any of that kind of thing. But you see them there three or four times a year, year after year, talking about their experiences. And then when they're out and about, they're having the conversations with the people they're mixing with, and they're bringing those stories and that information and that knowledge back, and then sharing it back out from a point like, you know, Tough to Talk, as a sort of base to share that message. And I think it needs that continuity, because then you know that if someone's doing it month after month, year after year, they're doing it because they believe in it and it matters to them.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I think really your question also highlighted a little bit of the challenge that these people face when they do that, in terms of, you know, you sort of say it could look like PR. You know, depending on, you know, who it is, it could look like attention seeking, which we, you know, we often attribute to many people in the media. However, one of the things you are aware of, that some people will seek that attention because of what they lack in their life, the other feelings that might be natural to you or I in a loving family unit, they don't get from that. And that's a lot of the reason why they do that. So as frustrating as it can appear to be, there's actually a very good reason why some people do behave in the way that they do. And when you think about people who do stuff with charity and draw attention to some fantastic causes, it pains me to say it because I'm not a Man United fan, even though that Dave is. Marcus Rashford is someone, you know, I look up to because he will speak out about things that are important to him. I think he's fantastic for doing that. And I'd rather hear someone like him, you know, speaking about something like Tough to Talk as a charity rather than you hold up an example like Robin Williams, you know, who was a guy who we all look to, and there were the subtle hints there. And the guy, you know, from my generation, Joy Division, if you think of Ian Curtis, all those signs were there. And then they sadly take their life, and then that's when they become the poster child for suicide awareness afterwards. And that's not what we want for anybody. And the comment there, then again, that comes out of the Tough to Talk YouTube channel is, imagine if the strong men in your workplace found their voice and became the role models other men need. And I guess it's that, you know, that's what we're looking for, isn't it? That's what you're looking for. Yeah. Not just, you know, if you do it in the workplace, fabulous. If you can do it in a public forum, if it's a huge public figure, then that's absolutely fantastic. So as well as the challenges that men face just for being men, and the way that we are, the way that we're brought up to be manly men, and we don't talk about our emotions because we're, you know, Dave and I are Gen Xers. And, well, if you ever see me after Arsenal lose, I can tell you that I'm actually have to talk about my emotions. But as well as that, what other factors? I mean, there is, like I say, the social factors. Surely, you know, the financial pressures that people are feeling, that must have an impact, I suppose, on why people do what they do.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of different factors, aren't there? And I think, I suppose the most important thing is that we really want to talk about breaking the silence. So whatever factor it is, or whatever you're dealing with within your life, is just thinking about, well, how can I communicate this in a way that doesn't feel like I'm not being a man, because I'm being more vulnerable, or I'm moving against what society expects from me. Maybe also being fearful of the reaction that you get. Sometimes if you've never had, let's say your husband, my husband's always been the strong one in our relationship, and I've had my challenges, but when he reached out and said, I'm actually struggling, I didn't know what to say. Sometimes we think, oh, I'll have all the answers, or I'll know what to say. But because I was so shocked, because he's never said that before. So it's even about how we respond in those moments to make sure that when people do say something, we can say, okay, you know, let's talk. What do you need from me? Yeah. And just, I don't know if I answered your question.
No, you did. I mean, the key thing is, like I say, my question really is, like, you know, I was thinking about the financial factors sort of post-Brexit, you know, post the pandemic. You know, we know there are incredible financial challenges, especially, you know, around the cost of energy and things that people are facing now. We know that puts its pressure. And I guess, you know, like you say, those things, although important, I would never say that they weren't. The key thing is about getting men talking. And I guess if you are aware, then maybe that there are people out there who may be potentially financially struggling, people in your friends group you can see a difference with, then maybe those are the ones you want to speak to first. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's about identity as well, isn't it? I've read a really good book. It's called Of Men and Boys by Richard Reeves. I don't know if you've read it. It's an incredible book, but you know, the identity, men used to be providers, or single providers for the household, you know, excelling at school, university. But actually, and he's writing this book from America, but also he's giving some global statistics, is actually men from poorer communities are really struggling because they're not making maybe the same salaries as perhaps their partners. They're not required in the home as much as they would like. A lot of women are finding, well, actually, I can do it on my own. And there's that loss of identity. Well, if I'm not a provider and I'm not needed as a father, then what am I needed for? And if I don't have somebody out there who maybe is role modeling something that aligns with where I am now, I think that can lead to a lot of feelings of loss and frustration. Even girls, and it's because there's been so much investment in girls, which has been fantastic, but girls in the American school system are actually doing much better than boys. They're graduating at higher levels at high school and university. And I don't want to be controversial, but the gender pay gap as well. I mean, he kind of shows there isn't a gender pay gap. There's a parent gap where women who generally are carers or they stay home with children, the pay gap isn't really about gender. It's more about more women spend time at home, which means that there is a pay gap and maybe they don't have the same flexibility to work the hours or some of the jobs that men take. But I know that could be controversial. That could be a whole nother conversation. But it's a really valuable book. I would strongly suggest anyone to read it because it certainly opened my eyes to a lot of the assumptions I think that we have, or a lot of things. I just hate the division where it feels like it's men and women against each other. I think there's a lot of pain for both men and women when it comes to mental health and suicide. And I think that men are suffering at this time more and that they're in need of great help. So what I think would be powerful is if we just came together and thought, how can we solve this together? Because supporting men in our communities, supporting men at home, supporting men in our organizations will only benefit everyone. It'll benefit their homes, their families, their children, their loved ones. So, I wish we could just stop all the conversations about it has to be one or the other and just think about, well, why can't we just do it together?
Yeah. Wow. That's really quite powerful when you think about it. Yeah. The focus might be on men, but we are effectively looking at keeping a family sort of unit together. And I certainly know from my own situation, my wife earns vastly more than I do, has a much better job than I do, and is much better at keeping the house, doing all that kind of stuff. I've got to be careful choosing my words because she's watching the head getting even bigger.
You started well, Adam.
Yeah, no, she's fabulous. She does it all. I'd be on my backside. The kids would be going to school in rags if it was down to me. I know it would. But, I put her on a pedestal. I do put her on a pedestal. And then I also enjoy the money that she earns as well. That's another matter. By the by, so there's a plus side of these matters, but no, it's like you say, and I laugh and I joke about it. But if I was of a different disposition, it could very easily be something that could get under my skin and actually make me feel diminished as a man. But thankfully, just to be on the record, there's plenty of other factors that make me do that as well. But none of those too much on a daily basis. So like I say, financial stress is one of the is an impact. That's not what we're looking at here as well, is it? It's getting to the root of the problem. Dave, you've got a pretty key role inside an organization. I take it, without going into too much detail, part of the reason you're at the conference that Erin was at was looking at these sort of things, because I know you're passionate and you care about your workforce. And whenever we've had a conversation, although it's not really clear what it is that you actually do to it on a day-to-day basis, I do gather you do care about your workforce, and I don't want a job, but I'm sure you're a wonderful person to work for. But is this something that you factored in, and how have you gone about putting it in place in your workplace, Dave? If you don't mind my asking, putting you on the spot there.
No, it's fine, and I think as a leader of an organization, that role within an organization is absolutely key to the culture, and the culture of your organization dictates how things like talking about mental health in general, people struggling in general, and men and this subject in particular, because that's what we're talking about. And if you're I consider myself a human-centered leader, and that's where you talk to people, you understand people, and to get the best out of people, you need to show them respect. You need to make sure that they feel trusted and valued, and they have meaning within their workplace. And if you put all of those things in place and you demonstrate that from the top down, then people come along with you. So we've had instances within our organization where people have had, pretty bad mental health challenges, men. They've talked about it openly, but I'm not gonna raise the individuals on this, but they've talked about it openly. I think it's essential that you support people, and you have to care for people. You have to give people the space to get help, the space to recover. If you get to the point where that people are having mental health challenges, and actually what you're doing is saying you're not doing your job, you're not focused, you're not achieving. All you do is push that person further into a difficult place. You have to be able to step back and say, what can we do to help? And if you've got that as a cultural thing within your organization, it's not just an HR person saying that or one line manager saying that. It's actually everybody saying that. So in our leadership team, there's six of us, and we're a great team, and we look around and we support each other. And the first, when somebody says, I've got this going on, I've got an issue, everyone just says, what do I need to do? That's the kind of default. You go do what you need to do. There's nothing that can go wrong that we can't pick up here. That's our default. And that then flows down to the rest of the people in the organization. And that's their default, is to how can we help? How can we can support? And that's a top-down thing. But once you've gone top-down, it comes back up, and then it's everywhere.
Yeah.
And that's like the perfect example of I think showing vulnerability in the workplace and being able to, Brené Brown did a really good, I'm just trying to think what, if it was with Adam Grant, but are you familiar with Brené Brown and her studies on vulnerability?
No.
And so she has the number one TED talk. She's well worth watching. She's really incredible, but she was talking about, because sometimes people, I think vulnerability means spilling everything, like, you know, talking, I have to say everything that's happening in my life. But sometimes vulnerability could be, I'm going through something. You may notice that I seem a bit down. I don't want you to ask me about it, but I thank you. And I want you to know that I appreciate your support. That can be it. You don't have to share exactly what it is, but you can, it's just letting people know that I am going through something. I don't need anything from you right now, but if I do, I'll ask. And that can be really powerful. Any way in which you can kind of share, like, I am going through something, but you don't have to give the ins and outs of that, because for a lot of people that would be very uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. So just even saying, I'm not okay. I don't need anything right now, but I will come forward if I do.
And the key there is that you have to have a safe environment for them to be able to say that in the first place, but also trust has to be there, because they have to trust that you will take that, what they say, and go, okay, we are here to support. You say as much or as little as you want. And, you know, and within an organization, there's a balance, because you talked about gender pay gap being a controversial thing, but I hear there's a sort of thought that some people say that within work, we're all one family. And I don't personally like that. And in fact, it came through in a conversation. I was having a one-to-one with one of my people today. And we were talking about openness and communication. That's one of the things we were talking about. And Kirsty said to me, I know you don't like calling us a family, but you know, the things we do to make everyone feel happy and welcome, because I call it a team. It's like a football team.
Yeah.
You get on, you work together, you do everything for each other. But at the end of the day, if you're not fit in that team, you go and find a better fit somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Family, you're stuck with them, basically.
Yeah.
So I think that's
get rid of your kids.
That's it. So that's the difference. So I don't like calling work family. You can have friends, and you can make great friendships. Of course you can within work. But the whole piece is about, you know, being teams and supporting each other and trusting each other. And it's a great place to work when your organization's like that. And if more organizations had that kind of approach, I think that would go a long way to helping solve mental health in general, because it does just get worse and worse. If you get to a point where you hate going to work, if you wake up in the morning and the first thing you think is, oh my God, I've got to go to work today, that's just making it so much more worse. So much worse, because you have to go to work, you have to pay the bills. If you don't go to work, a lot of people won't get paid. If you don't get paid, you've got the financial pressures, you've got a partner that's saying, why aren't you going to work? And things can snowball, I would imagine, very, very rapidly. Whereas if work is a safe place, it can have the opposite effect. If your pressures and stresses are finances or family or the fact that your house is, you know, moldy or whatever, and work can be a safe place. It can actually support you and help you through difficult times.
Yeah. And then that's what I think organizations can be. They have so much power to be a force for change, and have such a positive impact on not only employees, but their families. So absolutely putting in place just some, what might feel like some small measures. It could be providing free coaching. It could be, you know, a really great EAP offering, or even just having like us come in and do some USI courses and tough talks and just get the conversation going. So there's so many great resources out there. It's just finding a way to make them make sense so that they're valuable to your people. It doesn't feel like, oh, here's a tick box exercise, but actually here's something that I can actually use that will benefit my life and potentially everyone else's life.
Yeah, I mean, Aaron's there talking about the EAP, and those are great resources that organizations, more and more, particularly through COVID and the way that made mental health across the country a lot worse, particularly with sort of teenage, that kind of generation. And EAPs, quite often they will give you support for you and your family. So more organizations are putting them in, but it's a real challenge. And that's one of the things we do as part of our business. And it's a real challenge for our clients in a sense, because, or an industry challenge, because it's hard to communicate them in a way, as Aaron was saying, that people understand the value and how to access them in the right way at the right time. But the flip side to that is that they're very price sensitive, and that if they're used extensively, particularly if you're then talking to real counselors at the end or therapists at the other end, the costs of it go up a lot as well. So it's kind of the industry wants to sell EAPs into businesses because that's what their business model is, but equally they don't want them to be overused, because if they're overused, it means they have to put the prices up. You put the prices up and that might reduce demand. So it is a bit of a vicious circle, but that's a sort of a business to business kind of issue. But the employee side of it is that communication, and it's something we're looking at within our organization as well. How can we support our clients to communicate it better so that they know it's there, how they access it? Because it can just be, we have clients and we have turned down clients where it's clearly they're doing this for a tick box exercise. You know, they're not really interested in supporting. It's not really a cultural piece. It's not really a help. It's, we need to do it. And when organizations put it in like that, it's no point. There's no value.
No, because they're not going to communicate in the right way. But I guess to counter that, I would say, how much does, I mean, mental health costs the UK economy billions, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. And even there was some really good ONS data. Now I wish I remembered it. Somebody posted on LinkedIn yesterday about the cost of suicide actually to organizations. And it was in the billions. So I think even though it feels short term like a big expense, the wonderful thing is if you as a man call 111, you will be prioritized. If you say that you have thoughts of suicide, you will be prioritized. But then the aftercare can be up to 2 years to get counseling. Mm. So imagine, and you're three times more likely to attempt suicide once you've attempted it the first time. So can you just even thinking if an organization could step in early and say, look, you've gotten the help you need. Now we're here to support you as well, to bridge that 2 year gap, to make sure that people get the help they need when they need it. I would think that you would get a lot more out of your employees. And I don't have the data on that, but I would imagine the cost would be incredible.
It is, but it absolutely
probably
is.
Hard to measure.
That's the challenge, because the EAPs within our industry are normally priced on the number of employees in an organization. So if you've got an organization of 1,000 people, it's going to be quite expensive, and it's very hard to quantify that cost of £20,000 a year to give 1,000 people an access to an EAP, where actually probably only 20% would ever really think of using it. 10% may use it and get something. 5, 4, 3% may actually really need it, but 1 or 2% who need it may actually access it and get real value and make a big difference. But to flip that back to an employer and say, you know what, if those 50 people hadn't have accessed it, they'd have been off work, they'd have been sick, they'd have been unproductive, and you know, 2 or 3 of them may have lost their lives. There's cost, there's sort of, you know, social cost, actual cost that attributed to that. You then got all the recruitment costs that come falling on from that, and retention that comes into that whole piece costs way, way, way more than the cost of putting the package in the first place. But it's not an easy message to get across.
No, I imagine so.
No. One thing I'll shout out as well. So in terms of, I did 20 odd years in retail. And retail is like a lot of industries, has its pressures and it puts its pressures on the individual. And I will shout, I had a boss in my last sort of 5 years in retail, a guy called Gareth Jones, and I will give him a good shout, because I think he was one of these people who lived and breathed the importance of mental health. And so I had a number of stores that reported into me. And every Monday morning, we'd had a conversation about it. And I can honestly say we'd have an hour and a half, maybe, conversation on a Monday morning where we discussed everything. And very rarely did figures come up first. And more often than not, they didn't come up at all, because he talked about the people. And one of the things he was great at was saying, I've got my concerns about this person in this store. Build some time into your schedule this week and go and spend some time with them. I want to know that person's okay. Now, I'm not going to say he was unique in retail, but he was certainly more unusual. There weren't many people that cared more about the workforce than they did the actual figures. And we have, unfortunately, all worked for those people who are looking at the tasks getting achieved, boxes getting ticked, and the people come secondary. It's about fulfilling those tasks. So we know that the size of the challenge can be not for everybody, because like I say, for all those people who are box tickers and want the job done, there are those Gareths out there who are fabulous and cared about people. But there's a definite challenge there as well, in terms of, you know, the goal of a business is to make money. It is, you know, it's to perform those tasks. And people will focus on that rather than focusing on the people doing it, and understanding that when your workforce are happy and they're satisfied and they know that they're cared for, like Dave says, you know what I mean? They have a caring environment around them. Sometimes the workplace can actually be a great place to be. And that's, I guess, what, you know, a lot of what you want to create, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at Gallup, teams or people that feel supportive and you treat them as human beings first, those teams are far more profitable. They're engaged. There's less turnover. I mean, there isn't anything that, if you want short-term results, you can, of course, just focus on the numbers. But when you focus on people and you allow them to show up and be their whole selves, and you let them bring their emotions and everything else, of course, we all have to be professional. And I know how hard retail is, because I've worked in retail before, and I don't think I've ever spoken to any manager that talked about people first and then numbers. So that sounds like a really great leader. But when you just focus on the people, you'll always get greater outcomes.
Yeah, 100%. And when we're thinking about people as well, there's people out there listening to this podcast. They could be leaders. They could be any size cog in that machine. What would be the one thing that we want them to take away from this podcast? What difference can they make? Whether if they're not the ones affected, how can we help those affect those that are?
So we're really there to support breaking the silence. So we want to work with you. We have resources to help you talk within your organizations. We've also raised money for any organizations that are out there thinking we'd love to offer some understanding suicide intervention courses, but we can't afford them. We've raised money to support organizations that can't do that. If you are in a male dominated space and you want help, then contact us, let us know, because we would love to support you. Just for someone who's kind of not thinking from an organizational perspective, I would say, just be really aware of the people around you and check in with your male friends and find a way. One way I really like, which is, he was a leader in a construction site, and he used to go onto the construction site every day and everybody had to give him a number between 1 and 10. He said, "We work in construction. It's stressful and it's also dangerous. I need your head in the game. So when I ask you, I need you to be honest. Your 1 means I'm not good. Things are not right with me. And 10 is I'm brilliant." And every new person that joined, he'd say, "I need you to adopt this method because this is how we take care of each other. This is how we make sure that you're safe and you're taken care of." And people adopted it. He did it every day himself. He's like, "Today I'm a 6. This is why. How are you guys doing?" And they just adopted it and became the norm. So if you can find ways in which to connect with your male friends, your colleagues, any way in which to say, "Hey, can we do this? Or can we implement this? Or how can we check in on each other? How can we be honest?" And hopefully get more conversations started. That's really what we want to do.
Yeah, that's the key thing. That's the key thing, I guess, starting that conversation. And I guess how you do it doesn't really matter, you know, whether it's the 1 to 10 scale, which is a great way of doing it. You know, it takes it away from the emotion. Give me a number. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's giving it a rating. But, you know, there's feeling behind that. I think that's a very interesting way of doing it. Dave, have you got any tips for people? Any thoughts from your experiences?
Well, I think we've covered it a lot, and it's that talking, you know. And we've done podcasts before. We've had people from mental health charities on before, and I know Gaz, the other host of the podcast, who's not here tonight. What he often says, Gaz being Gaz, he says it about 12 times in the podcast because he keeps repeating it. But what he says is, you know, pick up your phone, scroll through your contacts, and just look at a mate, a friend that you've not actually reached out to or spoken to or heard from for, you know, 6, 8, 10 months, whatever, and just send them a message and just spark a conversation, ask how they're doing backward and forward. And it might be enough, because that person may want to reach out to somebody. And actually, because you're not in their immediate sphere day to day, you might be that person that's a little bit more remote, a little bit easier to open up to. So that's, I'm just going to give Gaz his tip, because he does say it. And what you need to do is just go into your phone and look for, I'm joking, I'm not going through it again. But I think that's a really sensible thing, because there's people in your phone that you haven't spoke to. So for a while, reach out, and it could be the thing that sparks the conversation.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah.
Be brave, I think. Just lean into being brave. And even like you were saying, Adam, you might get shot down and might be, why do you keep asking me that? I'm absolutely fine. At least you know.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Move on to the next person then after that person's fine. But yeah, we've done it before. So like Dave says, we've done podcasts in the past where we focused on mental health as well. And we've done it afterwards. We picked up our phone and just texted a couple of people and just checked in with them just to make sure that they are okay. And I think it's important, you know, like Dave said, it doesn't have to be somebody you haven't, you know, that you speak to on a daily basis. It could be something you've not heard from in a while. And, I'm not going to share personal experiences, but there are times that I've done it and it has made a difference, you know what I mean? And people will gladly tell you how pleased they are to hear from you. And Lord knows, if they're pleased to hear from me, Christ, it must have been depressing before. But in all seriousness, just that little bit of contact can, you know, it can make a difference. It really can make a difference. I know I'm being facetious here, but it's a really important message to take away. So as we're coming towards the hour mark then, so what we really need to do as well is to give out some details as well as to where people can find Tough to Talk. And I know you have a Just Giving page as well. Is that correct? Where people can donate to the work that you do?
Yeah, we've got a Just Giving page. We've got Tough to Talk, the website. We've got our book. We've got our book launch coming up where you can connect with me on LinkedIn, Aaron Frost or Steve Whittle. We're always updating on everything that's going on with the charity. And actually, we've had so many people start Just Giving pages for us. We've been really lucky. People just find us on Just Giving and say, "I'm going to run this marathon and I've decided you're going to be my charity of choice." And we've also had a lot of support from Cooper Perry, who have donated a lot of money and are hosting our book launch. So we've been, the support we've received has been incredible, and we just thank everyone for all of their support.
Oh, that's fantastic. That is fantastic. Now, I say we We do a little bit for charity ourselves, so I'm not making any promises we actually get anything sorted anytime soon, because we're dragging our feet on having another go at a Guinness World Record that we're all getting a little bit older now, a little bit longer. But by golly, we'll have a go, and if we do, I can promise you, your charity will be on our sponsorship forms. I can promise you that.
That would be amazing, and I'd love to hear which record you're going to try to beat.
Well, it's close. We are going to have a pop at having the Guinness World Record for trebles hit in 24 hours at Dart. So we will have a go at that very, very soon. But I have to say, it's been in planning now for about 2 years, and we're all getting a little bit longer in the tooth. But we will. We've said it so many times on the podcast that we will get it done. And in fact, we have a production meeting next Tuesday, so I'll put that top of our list to make sure that we get something done. And we will certainly make sure that we donate towards your charity when we do that. I can promise you that. Comment there from your YouTube saying thank you, Aaron, Adam, and Dave. You're breaking silence right now. Great job, and thank you for raising awareness about male suicide. And I guess that's it. All we've done tonight really is talk about it.
Yeah.
And all we're asking you to do is go out and talk about it, but talk about it to people that matters. Hopefully, mm-hmm. this message will go out there and make a difference to somebody, whether that's somebody who's facing a challenging time at this moment in time, or somebody who knows somebody who's facing a challenging time, and they can go and have that conversation on your behalf. And like you say, you know, you can find Tough to Talk on all the social media sites. You can find the website. When you search it, I can tell you it comes up at the top of the Google search engine when it's searched. Yeah. And yeah, it's wonderful. It's great that there are people out there doing this, because it is a worthy cause, and it's a very challenging one, because you know, we can talk about talking, but mm-hmm. we have to go out and do it. And that's where it becomes difficult, because it ain't easy breaking the ice. It ain't easy saying that first word. So, you know, if you're looking in and you're listening to this and you're thinking what wonderful work they can do, you too can do that yourself. You too can go and have that conversation with somebody, and you can go and make a difference, can't you, Dave?
Absolutely. And I'm just looking in terms of that immediate support, urgent support, and on the toughtotalk.com website there's a main menu item there, get support, and it's really good actually. It's broken down 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, if this is immediate, this is what you do, this is who you call. If it's, you know, urgent support, then it's a whole list of resources. So it's just, you know, as an organization, as a charity, as a source for information and advice, I think it's really good, and respect to you and the other people. Mm-hmm. There's lots of the, I've looked at the about us, it's kind of mixed 50-50 roughly by men and women there. And you're trying to support men, of course you've got to have women involved, because Christ, you know, if we left it to ourselves, as we know, it's not going to work out. That's the whole point, that's the problem, isn't it? So you need both. I think it's just amazing work that you and the others do, Erin, and it's been a privilege to speak to you tonight.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me, and yeah, I really appreciate the opportunity, and I look forward to your Guinness challenge, and I'd love to invite you both to the book launch. Send you a dartboard.
Gaz is going to be cursing me for volunteering this for this.
It's on the 16th of May.
16th of May. And where's that? Sorry.
It's at Cooper Perry, and it's actually in the East Midlands, near East Midlands Airport. But I can send, I'll send you both an invite.
Oh, yeah. Do that. Yeah. Let us know if I can be there. I can promise you I will. And for folks who are listening, if you can't make it to the book launch yourself, then you can also just pick up a book and we will share the link. And it is on Amazon and it's reasonably priced. I'm not going to show off, but I bought this and the Kindle version as well.
And you don't even have a Kindle. That's how committed you are.
Thank you. / fat thumbed, I am.
Yeah. It also can't read.
Well, no, I really appreciate it.
The truth is not there. Yeah, indeed. So, if you'd like to say one last goodbye to our listeners, I can only thank you on our behalf for joining us.
Thank you very much. And this has been, it's just been great chatting with you both, and really appreciate the opportunity to share more about what we're trying to do at Tough to Talk.
Fantastic. Dave?
Yeah, thanks again, Aaron. It's been good. It's good to just talk and get the word out there. The more people that do it, the better for everyone.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. All it leaves really for me is to say thank you very much. We really appreciate it. We appreciate all the good work that you're doing. And hopefully, that, you know, we've reached somebody out there that can make a difference tonight. So we'll hope you keep that in your mind. And if you're interested or if you're struggling yourself, feel free to reach out. And you know where to do that now. So thank you very much and good night.